Welcome to another edition of Radio Zine here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Ken Jones, your host for today's show. In this episode, we interview Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, creators and writers of the Welcome to Night Vale podcast. The podcast takes place in the fictional southwestern desert town of Night Vale, where all conspiracy theories are real and libraries can be fatal. The biweekly podcast started in June 2012 and has, since then, been downloaded more than 100 million times worldwide. The podcast has also spawned a touring live show and now a novel titled, of course, Welcome to Night Vale, which is already a bestseller. Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, thanks for being here on KBOO.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, actually, Joseph and Jeffrey, they're connecting to us via Skype right now from a hotel in Seattle. And there was an episode I was listening to again to prepare for the interview in which the Night Vale City Council airs their meetings over Skype. And their Skype is running on an Asus laptop that can't be turned off. So I'm guessing your laptops are under your complete control right now.
So far.
Okay.
As much as any laptop is under complete control.
Okay. Now, but getting back to the beginning, before Night Vale, you both were writing for live theater in New York. How did you go from that to the podcast?
When we were started working together, when we first met, I was doing a show called Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, which is done by the Neo-Futurists. It's a weekly show of 30 plays in 60 minutes. There's a clock on the wall. We have a bunch of short plays. We do them in random order. We kind of race against time. And so it's a lot of like short form performance art, not necessarily sketch comedy, although some of it is funny, some is political, a lot of personal type of stuff. And Joseph, when he moved to New York in 2009, started coming to that show, and we met doing that. And when I was doing that, and he would come up, and we started having conversations afterwards. In fact, we first met because I had written a play wherein I had burned a book that I did not like, and I took all of its ashes and threw it in a bucket, and I talked about it with the audience. And Joseph approached me after the show and said, hey, I found your play super immoral.
And and you still have something against books in the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, and we've been working together ever since.
It's a theme.
But no, I mean, we both have had like a lot of experience, a lot of our, I mentioned to you earlier when we first got on the line about, radio theater. You know, Joseph and I don't have a lot of background in radio theater at all, really. I would say close to none. But we do both love the classic art of storytelling, a single person on a stage delivering a monologue, creating a world, creating characters. And so I think that when we started Night Vale, that was the thing. But we, our first project working together was a play called What the Time Traveler Will Tell Us that we did in the East Village back in 2011. And we sort of developed that, the art of like, while there were two of us on stage, it was a lot of kind of like single form, single person storytelling in that. And Night Vale came out of not only that style and that genre of theater, but also our working style came into form then.
So that kind of monologue format came from the theater. And the podcast itself, as I've mentioned, is enormously popular. Enormously is probably too small a word. It started in June 2012. Things really took off about a year later, summer of 2013. At that point, you were the most downloaded podcast on iTunes, even more than the infamous Ira Glass at This American Life. What do you think led to this somewhat rapid success?
Well, I mean, there's kind of the one-word answer, which is Tumblr. Tumblr found us. And that's what happened. As to why that happened, there's kind of two answers. The first is I guess there's way more than two answers. let me give two answers that are actually going to be different than the two answers I gave other times I've talked about this. I think one thing actually that really appealed to Tumblr is the fact that we don't have any visuals. You know, Tumblr is a very fan art based community. They like being able to dress up as characters. They like being able to draw characters. And the thing about Night Vale is absolutely no one is described. Most people are described not at all. Some people are described with one or two things, but no one's described in detail. And so you could have this kind of freedom that as a fan artist, you usually, if you're drawing the current Doctor Who, you kind of have to draw what the actor looks like. But if you're drawing the main character of our show, you can draw anything you want, human or otherwise, and it'll be accurate. The other big thing, kind of another big thing was it happened right after our first anniversary episode, in which the main character Cecil got together with his boyfriend Carlos. And yeah, we heard from a lot of people that having this kind of central couple that is gay, but that is not, that their sexuality is not the center of the story, that the story is about other things. The story is not trying to explain their sexuality to you or teach you a lesson about it. It just is. And that's not the most interesting thing about those characters. And I think a lot of people really appreciated that. There's unfortunately not that many stories doing that.
Oh, yeah. And I apologize for telling the story again. I told it to Jeffrey before you got on the line, Joseph. The Carlos reference kind of makes this a little bit more relevant. I saw your last appearance in Portland at Powell's Books in Cedar Hills, where you'll be tomorrow night. And I went in naively thinking I'd be one of the only people in the audience at that time. In fact, I got there about 45 minutes early, and I just about was at that point. So I got a seat near the front. But then over those next 45 minutes, of course, the place just filled up and filled up and filled up. So it was just expanding out into the mall there. It was mostly a younger generation than mine. The Carlos references, that seemed to be the most popular question after you presented and started taking a Q&A. The audience, what at one time a sociologist might call disaffected youth, which is probably all people of that age, what do you think's the attraction for this age group?
Well, I mean, I think it's just that, like what Joseph was saying, which is the idea of, I think there's an idea of a representation that is seemingly new in mass media. You know, there just aren't a whole lot of characters represented that you know, the younger generation can immediately identify with. You know, when so much of television and film, you know, for practical reasons, is written by people in their 30s and 40s and 50s and so on, the values and the type of people expressed in that comes a lot from an older generation. So just something about the characters in Night Vale, I think, appealed more to a broader range of people online. And especially with, you know, people on Tumblr, there are so many communities that are concerned with representation, not only in terms of, you know, sexual identity, but also gender identity and race identity. And I think that Cecil and Carlos' relationship hit on all of those. And then at the baseline of it all is just I think it's a, I don't know, we felt like it was a really good story, and it was a sweet and funny and romantic story. And so I think just that too, just in terms of storytelling, appealed as well.
Now, are you seeing a more diverse audience as the podcast goes on? I'm of an older generation. I could be the dad of most of the people I saw at your last appearance. I'm drawn to it for the sheer power of the storytelling. Also, I just love audio theater, and you guys are extremely successful at that in conveying the story through just sound and voice alone. So, again, the question is the audience just certainly beyond this younger group?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say the audience expanded past just them pretty soon. You know, certainly we've seen a broad amount of people at our shows. You know, we've done shows with 2,000 people in the room, and they weren't all teenagers. Oftentimes, you know, the teenagers are the ones up front, because they're the ones, you know, when you're a teenager, you get enthusiastic about things and you get right on and buy your tickets right away, and so you get the seats right up front. And so oftentimes those will be the people kind of right at the front. But all you know, I think there's also people that come and enjoy the story and then leave and go get a drink and experience it in a much different way. We've met entire families, the kids and the parents and even, you know, grandparents that all like Night Vale for different reasons. It's been really nice.
You're still producing biweekly episodes of the podcast in addition to the live shows. And now we have the Night Vale novel, which we should talk about, get to that. What were your reasons for expanding the Night Vale universe with the book?
You know, it was when we started with the podcast, it came out of just our love of podcasting as an art form, you know, right? Joseph and I listened to so many different podcasts that we absolutely loved. And it just seemed like a really, really cool medium to get involved in. And given our background as, you know, while we don't perform on the show, but our background in theater and our background as writers, just of short stories and such, you know, it made sense that could be a thing we could do. And then the very first thing we did outside of the podcast for Night Vale was to take it to the stage. We do a touring live show. We've done more than 150 shows. We're on, while Joseph and I are on book tour, the cast and crew is on a Canada and US tour right now. And they just, have a two nights in Toronto right now as we're talking. And, you know, so that in our background in theater made a bunch of sense to do that too. So the novel, once we got popular enough, we started getting some attention from publishers as well as people in TV and film and in comic books. But because we're writers, the novel was far and away the most appealing thing to us. It was a thing that we knew we would know immediately how to write, and how to write prose and how to write a book. And the novel gives us such an opportunity to kind of get outside of just Cecil's voice. You know, with the words on the page, we can now give readers a chance to kind of like see what it's like inside the heads of characters and go around into the different buildings in Night Vale, and not all through the filter of a single radio voice. So it just made the most sense to us to go to novel. It's something Joseph and I have been wanting since we were kids. Separately, we didn't grow up together, to write a book.
I know in some other interviews, you actually did a wonderful interview with Leonard Lopate in New York of WNYC. You had mentioned Cory Doctorow's review of the book in terms of things that you could do in the novel that you couldn't do in a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, he talked a bit about kind of the interesting thing. You know, the podcast is entirely about the gap between what Cecil tells you and what you know is true. You know, you never go inside anyone's head in the podcast, which is sort of what makes it fun. You know, you kind of have to try and figure people out based on what they say. But with a novel, you go inside people's heads. You know, that's just sort of the basic form of a novel. There's not that many novels that don't go into a character's thoughts somehow. And so it was really interesting to be able to write Night Vale from that point of view, from the very direct point of view of what a resident of Night Vale thinks about the world they live in.
That leads into what I think might be the most striking thing that hits somebody when they read the novel. Coming from the podcast is narrated by Cecil Gershwin Palmer, played by Cecil Baldwin, and he's the host of Night Vale Community Radio, and it's almost all his narration in the podcast. But the novel is actually in the third person. Cecil makes some brief appearances in sections titled The Voice of Night Vale, which is very close to the podcast. But the main characters are not Cecil and Carlos in there. They're Jackie Fierro, Josh Creighton, Diane Creighton. How did you make that decision? Was that because of that reason you can get into those interior thoughts and how people react to the events in Night Vale and Cecil's narration and announcements?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And you know, on top of that, when we first decided, oh, we're going to do a novel now, let's figure out what this is. And, you know, one of our very first conversations is that, you know, it's a different medium. It's a book. It's a few hundred pages as opposed to a 25-minute, 30-minute episode. So it didn't make sense to make the whole thing a radio show, because that is completely – that's disconnected, right, from how a radio show actually is experienced. And so we knew right away we wanted to get out into the world of Night Vale more. And so, yeah, the novel gave us that opportunity to get into heads. And these two characters, with Diane and Jackie, are characters that Joseph and I have both thought about for a while. They were, you know, Jackie, when we started writing the novel, had not appeared on the podcast, although she has made some appearances recently. And Diane was a character who was kind of just a one-off character, like in episode 2 or 3, referencing her running a PTA event. But we both just kind of had these characters in our head that had stuck with us, that we just had like small ideas about them. And we thought, well, let's flesh them out as characters and see what they're really about, see what they would do in these situations, and give, you know, kind of an everyday person, just a common person in town, and follow them around, as opposed to the voice on the radio, a member of the media, as it were.
You're listening to Radio Zine on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking today with Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, creators and writers of the Welcome to Night Vale podcast and authors of the new novel, Welcome to Night Vale. What you had mentioned there about getting the townspeople, the Night Vale citizens, their reactions to some of the things that go on, you know, as we're listening on the podcast. There's one passage that really struck me for being on the radio, too. The radio came on by itself as she stood there, paper in hand. It always did at this time of night. Cecil Palmer, the host of Night Vale Community Radio, spoke to her. News, the community calendar, traffic. Nearly every broadcast told a story of impending doom or death, or worse. A long life lived in fruitless fear of doom or death. It wasn't that Jackie wanted to know all of the bad news of the world. It was that she loved sitting in the dark of her bedroom swaddled in blankets and invisible radio waves. It's so beautiful. You talk about the comfort of radio, and it's in a way, when we turn on the radio or the television, there's mostly bad news that you hear, and yet it's comforting in some way. It kind of brings us together. Is that what you were getting across here with Jackie's reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were talking in kind of a meta way, too, about the experience of the podcast and the experience of the people that listen to it. You know, kind of one of the reasons I didn't get to about why I think the popularity spiked is I think people really like having an example of a place that is very dangerous and scary, but that people are okay with it. Which is what Nightfall is. You know, Nightfall, people die in Nightfall all the time from really horrific things, but people just get on with their lives and just kind of don't worry about it too much. And the thing about life is, in the real world, people die all the time from really horrific things, and we kind of, if we're going to be able to function, we have to just kind of be okay with that and get on with it. So I think having that example, I mean, certainly for me, I deal with all sorts of anxiety issues, so writing Nightfall is helpful for me. So yeah, I think a lot of that was talking about, you know, even though Cecil wasn't the central part of our story, we wanted to really connect it directly to the experience of the podcast for those that listen to it.
And Joseph, too, you mentioned when you started off in terms of, you know, the dangers in our lives, you mentioned your dad was dying of cancer at the time when you started the podcast. And you said in Nightfall, it's things like, you know, librarians and hooded people and helicopters, secret police and all that. In our world, it's cancer.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't cancer that he was dying of, but he
oh,
had
I'm
a
sorry.
Medical issue for quite a while. We knew he was going to not live much longer, but we didn't know how long that was. So we had that kind of thing for years where we didn't know how much longer he was going to be around, and then he died, and very soon afterwards I started writing that, which at the time I didn't make that connection, but lately now that I've had the free psychotherapy of talking about myself all day every day, I've come to realize that I think Nightfall in a lot of ways was a very direct reaction to the experience of those years of uncertainty followed by the grief of losing him.
And that's something I'm sure all of your listeners and all of our cable listeners can identify with. They all have that particular, maybe several of those looming challenges in their lives and life or death situations, tragedies that they're dealing with, just like the people in Nightfall. Both audio, radio, and books are theater of the imagination. With a listener or reader having to fill in a lot of the gaps, which we've talked a little bit about before, especially the visuals when we talked about Tumblr. Is that something you prefer rather than live theater or maybe even movies or television?
I don't know necessarily that, or speaking personally, I don't know necessarily that I prefer it, although I like it as a different thing. I adore film, and I have a handful of TV shows that I really, really love and a handful of comic books that I love. But there's something about, yeah, there is something to the idea of having this imagination, and that is what radio and podcasting can do too. When you have a voice in your head, because there's two things that are happening. Like a novel, there's no visuals; there's just words to give you the visuals, so you're left to create on your own and draw these connections. And the other thing too is you have a voice in your ear, and you hope that voice is a comforting voice and a voice that is one in which you can relate to. And so, you know, that's the power of what radio can do. Like the passage you read, the comfort that Cecil provides the people in Nightfall. But yeah, the visual aspect of it, I mean, that's, Joseph and I have talked before about how we find visual descriptions of people to be kind of counterproductive, because if you're feeding somebody like what color their hair is, what size their body is, these things, you know, to some extent, some of those things can be, you know, cues for us in the everyday world to make a judgment on somebody. But that kind of thinking can be really dangerous. You know, you don't want to set up that somebody is a certain race or a certain size of person that then you put that in the reader's head, and then suddenly there's all this other baggage that comes with that. So the great thing is that with radios, you can avoid all that storytelling, just get through the character's actions. And then let the listener lay their own biases upon it without you forcing that.
So far, have you seen your listeners' depictions of maybe what Jackie Fierro looks like, or Diane Creighton, or Josh? Though Josh looks like a lot of different things at different points in the book. Does that sync at all with how you envision these characters?
I mean, I have not personally seen much in the way of fan art about that. I don't follow Tumblr too closely, so it's very likely that that fan art does exist. I just don't really go looking for it much. In terms of syncing with how I see the characters, the thing about that is I don't visualize characters when I write them. I am so profoundly uninterested in what fictional characters look like. I mean, when I'm reading a book and the author starts describing a character, I just start skimming past it because I cannot bring myself to care. And so when I'm writing a character, I honestly don't have any image in my head of what they look like.
Has any of the listeners' attempts at depicting these characters helped at all, or is it of any interest to you how they envision the characters?
I think it's interesting insofar as I become interested in like the way a fan base can take ownership of something you create. Because when you talk about like fan art and cosplay and fan fiction and things like that, you know, that all belongs, it's for and by fans. So while I have a Tumblr, so I will every now and then see, you know, fan art and things like that. But a lot of it is just more like I'm super excited that we've created so much interest in a world that we've created and that people like it so much. But it's more a matter of like, I never think of it too much as a confirmation of what a character could or should look like. I get most excited when I see, there's kind of been most drawings of, say, Cecil or Carlos kind of have a certain set look to them. But I do get really excited when I see people drawing or making a thing that is completely outside of that somehow established norm in the fan culture. Because it's nice to know that people can lay whatever they want on top of our show and have their own representation. Because I do think that some people, you know, want to see themselves in there. And I think that the show allows that. So I get excited in that way. But yeah, we don't really take it in as a, oh, this is how the fans perceive it, let's play off of that. Or we certainly avoid all types of fan fiction, not because we think it would be terrible, but because we know that it's for the fans and we don't want to clutter our any ideas.
I want to ask, since you had written so many podcasts before you started the book, the podcasts are about 25 to 30 minutes each, bi-weekly. The book has to sustain interest over a longer period of time, in this case, over 400 pages. How did you address that challenge?
I guess we just thought about it a bit. By the time we started writing the novel, we had written at least a novel's and a half's worth of serial podcast scripts. You know, so we were familiar with the world, we were familiar with how to write it, and we were familiar with writing larger stories in that world because we had done it. We had just done it spread across episodes rather than in a single thing. You know, and we wrote it in a similar way that we write the show, in that we kind of just started by writing some stuff kind of separately and having some ideas and then getting together and seeing what we had done and talking about how they could come together and then eventually, you know, plotting out exactly what was going to happen and then sort of working from that outline from then on.
Did you have any models in mind when you started the novel? I read a New York Times article recently about the book. It said that you went with HarperCollins because in their pitch to you, they showed you published works of Thomas Pynchon, Ursula Le Guin, who actually is mentioned in the book by name, Michael Chabon. Are these authors major influences on the work?
I it's hard to say major influences other than just there are authors whose works we have read and admire. And I think of all of those, Thomas Pynchon probably the most, the way he develops it, I think the way he develops in his language, these really complex, these really complex thoughts and plots and things like that, that, you know, stuff that sometimes kind of just turns back on itself and in a language that, you know, sometimes is less about being on a highway and more like doing donuts in a parking lot for a bit, just for visual. And I think more so, you know, in that example of going with Harper Perennial, the imprint at HarperCollins, I think it was this thing as we were shopping the book around, you know, we knew too that we had popular internet thing, and there were definitely people who were interested in putting popular internet thing out into the mainstream with a book. And, you know, so we definitely met with publishers who were seemed a little bit more interested in not necessarily a straight up literary novel, that were more interested in say like having artwork or having a, you know, that we even met with people who did graphic novels, which is something we didn't want to get into just yet. But with presenting those books on the table, you know, when you meet with publishers, oftentimes they'll show you the books that they do publish. And it just told us a lot about what Harper Perennial was interested in and the type of work they admired. And if you are telling me you want to publish my book and you also think Michael Chabon and Ursula Le Guin are brilliant authors, then I'm super excited to be working with you.
In the most recent Night Vale episode, titled An Epilogue, there are direct references to the novel. Characters Diane, Jackie, of course the man in the tan jacket who's appeared before. Just a quick digression on that, too. You have a line in that episode that I think could be Portland's official motto if you want to sell it to the city tomorrow. So much coffee, whether you want it or not. Are you planning more podcast episodes that intersect with the book?
No, that was sort of a one-off kind of. It was just seemed fun to me when I was thinking about what to do. You know, I was thinking it's 5 days before the book comes out. We should acknowledge that book somehow. At least once in the podcast, just to, and that seemed like an interesting way to do it. It's an interesting challenge to try and write an episode that takes place immediately after a story as the result of that story without spoiling anything that happens in that story. So it was sort of just a writing challenge to myself. We don't want people that listen to the podcast to have to read the book to understand the plot going forward, and we don't want people reading the book to feel like they have to listen to the podcast to understand the book. You know, we want those to be obviously taking place in the same world, but sort of separate experiences. So I would describe that as just sort of a one-off experiment.
We've been talking with Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, creators and writers of the Welcome to Night Vale podcast and authors of the new novel, Welcome to Night Vale. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Radio Zine on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to Joseph and Jeffrey for visiting us at KBOO, and for all of you for listening.